But first, we're going to take a step back to ask, why do so many cuisines feature peppers? I mean, they're not native to Asia, Africa, Europe, or Australia, so it's not like cooks in Thailand or India have always just gone back into the bushes to grab some. And how does a fruit that basically hurts you to eat it not go extinct? For answers to these questions, we turn to Heather Arndt Anderson, who wrote a book called Chilies, A Global History. Hey, Heather, thanks so much for talking with us.
It's nice to talk to you too, Francis.
So you are a botanist, actually, so I would love to start with a little bit of a plant nerd question.
Yeah, go ahead.
As I understand it, the reason why fruits are sweet and aromatic is because they, you know, that entices animals to eat them, and then the animals walk away and then poop out their seeds somewhere else, right? So they propagate the species, right?
That's right.
So with chilies, what could possibly be the evolutionary advantage to hurt the animals that eat you?
Well, you know, most fruits do look enticing to animals who spread the seeds, but not all animals are created equal. Mammals taste things differently than birds, and birds and mammals are both have a hand in spreading seeds around. The thing with birds, though, is that they don't have capsaicin receptors in their mouths, and so they can't actually taste the spiciness. And that's why birds have had such a hand. Well, they don't have any hands. They've played such a role in spreading chilies, whereas mammals have tended to avoid them. Non-human animals, I should say.
Oh, so actually, that's genius. That's brilliant, right? So then the idea is, if I could choose, like, for this orangutan to eat me and move, like, 16 feet, or I can choose for this bird to eat me and spread my seeds 15 miles from here, I can be all over the place if I can just, like, be styled in a way where only the bird will want to eat me.
Well, that's right. Yeah, and so chilies have had a real evolutionary advantage in selecting for birds as the propagators of their seed versus mammals.
But let me ask you actually about sort of the more human side of the movement. As sort of famously, right, peppers are native to the New World, to either Mexico or Central or South America, somewhere in that area is where they originated. So can you tell us a story of how they then got to the rest of the world?
Yeah. So Columbus made a couple of visits to the New World. He had an interest in finding routes to South America or the New World because he couldn't travel through the Indian Ocean. He had to find new ways. The first time he came, it was just the planting his flag and whatnot. And the second time, though, when he came in 1493, that's when he started realizing that there was some cool stuff in the New World that he could bring back to Europe. He brought chilies, among other things. I think vanilla was in there, too, to Spain. And Europeans spread them from Spain to Italy and northward from there. But it was when Portuguese explorers came to Brazil a few years later and brought the chilies to Goa in India that chilies were really able to spread to Asia and Africa and to the people who could really do something interesting with them.
Oh. And actually, that's a question I have too, right? Because those are cuisines that are known to be, you know, chili forward. I mean, we would say spicy, but I guess chilies are technically not spice, right? But you think of South Indian cuisine, you think of Thai cuisine, you know, those cuisines in Southeast Asia and South Asia you talk about. Why is it then that there seem to be some cultures that really took to the chilies and some didn't as much? I mean, they showed up in Europe before the Portuguese brought them to Africa and Asia. So, you know, why is German food not as hot as Thai food, I guess?
Well, Germany is an interesting situation because right when chilies were kind of blowing up in Europe, the Protestant Reformation was also happening. And so Germans didn't really want a lot to do with Catholic countries like Spain and Italy. They just weren't really very involved in the goings-on of Catholic countries. Versus Hungary, who had a lot more contact with the Ottomans and with Muslim travelers, and so they were exposed to it more. In Asia, though, spices were an exotic trade commodity, that were definitely commodified. And chili fit in really well with all of the pepper and prickly ash, or what we think of as Sichuan peppercorn that was being used already. Spices like ginger just were so complementary to chilies. And chilies could be grown very easily in there was a similar climate in South Asia as we have in South America, a little hotter and drier, but still really easy to grow these peppers. And the people who had contact with Portuguese explorers had a real interest in taking these vegetables, which were very nutritious, or their fruits, and having them in their own gardens to spice up their food. In East Asia, they got chilies a little bit later. They had to come from India through Southeast Asia and then up from there. So Korea and China got the chilies just a little bit later. But they had such an exchange in their food ways that it was just really like the news traveled fast.
But Japan, which actually had direct contact with the Portuguese, right?
Yeah.
Like chilies didn't really make much of a splash in Japan. Although, Korea is obvious. Korea and China are right next door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Japan got sugar and tempura from the Portuguese as well. But I haven't been able to figure out why Japan hasn't embraced the chili as much as their neighbors. I'm sure there were some social dynamics at play, cultural dynamics. There is, the shichimi togarashi that uses a little bit of chili, but it has, citrus peel, ponzu peel, and other spices in it as well. And so, yeah, I'm not sure why. Maybe it's due to their climate or something. I haven't been able to figure that one out.
Yeah. It's interesting. Some of these things are, there's a geographic sort of relationship, and you can see how things move with trade. And sometimes it's like, oh, cultures are kind of like, yeah, not for us. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Portugal never really adopted the chili into their cuisine either. They have vindaloo and piri-piri sauce, but it's not as prevalent as you would think, considering how much contact they had with chilies and what a hand they had in spreading them to Asia and Africa.
Yeah, that's incredible. Let me ask you another question that's a combination of cultural question and plant nerd question. But So chilies have always had capsaicin. They've always had the hot stuff in them. How did sweet peppers come to be?
Oh, well, Hungarians, who were among the first Europeans to truly love chilies, began breeding in the 1800s and were able to slowly develop a chili that was less spicy. I think, as it is with anything, there's always going to be a little freak occurrence of one individual organism that has a trait that humans like, whether it be a corn with a larger ear or a tomato with a redder skin. And I think that they, through just breeding and kind of experimentation, were able to find a milder variety. And then they really focused their breeding efforts on finding a way to consistently produce this milder chili for their paprika.
Oh. And that's how we eventually got something like a sweet bell pepper.
Yeah, it's really incredible to me how all of the different types of chilies and peppers that we eat today really came from just a couple of species. Now we have hundreds and hundreds of varieties just because humans found one quality that they liked in one little organism and were able to kind of manipulate that into something that would be so different over the course of a few hundred years.
Yeah. And I guess the question remains, did we manipulate the chilies or did they manipulate us?
I know. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. All right, Heather, thank you so much for talking with us today. This is super, super interesting stuff.
Thanks for talking to me.
Heather R. Anderson is the author of Chilies, A Global History.